Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. If you'd like to give us a call, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us Colonel Ron Ray, retired Marine Corps colonel, former Assistant Secretary of Defense during the Reagan administration for a time, and a man who today is filing briefs, practicing law in the defense of our Constitution. Now, there is an attack on the very fundamental beliefs of this nation about our Christian beliefs. This nation was founded as a Christian nation, and everybody knew that up until about 50 years ago. If you go back, of course, at the time when America was created as an independent nation, the basic precept of this country, different than any other country, was that our freedom came not from government, but from God. And those concepts were laid out in the Declaration of Independence, where it said that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men were created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and that in order to ensure those rights, why governments were instituted among men, deriving their power from the consent of the governed. That was why we had a constitution that limited the power of government. That's why we had a Bill of Rights that limited the power of the government. That's why America was free. But there have always been those, from the very inception of this country, starting back about 1640, when a group of Rosicrucians came to America from England, who wanted to use America to take the world into a new world order, a new world religion, and they realized to do that, they had to destroy the Christian foundations of this country. And they've been there like termites, constantly eroding away at the very foundations of this once great nation. And now, of course, they have taken God out of our schools and prayer out of our schools and the Ten Commandments out of our schools. And now they've attacked the military, the religious foundations of our military. Now, why do men fight for country? Well, they fight for God and country. They usually just aren't going to be fighting for just fighting. But our military tradition has always been deeply steeped with religious belief as well as with pride of nation and desire to preserve the nation. And there is an attack on the Virginia Military Institute, the fact that they have, of all terrible things, they have a prayer in VMI, and since it's a state-supported institution, efforts are being made to take the prayer out. Well, involved with this is Colonel Ron Ray, on the front lines of a far different battle than he fought in Vietnam, but far more deadly as far as the survival of America than Vietnam ever was. Vietnam never threatened the survival of America. But taking God out of our military certainly does. Colonel Ray, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Great to be with you, Stan, and a really good introduction.
Well, let's let you take it from there now, because you're on the front lines of this battle. And why is it so important that we do preserve the religious foundations of our military?
Well, they are the biblical foundations. You can say truly they come from the Old and New Testament, but one of the things is that our founders, although it is a Christian nation, and the Supreme Court held we were a Christian nation on four separate occasions from between the 1830s and as late as 1941, the point was that we weren't going to use the coercive power of government to force worship or force religious practice. However, for example, every president of the United States, every inaugural address, has done what the Declaration of Independence did. They recognize the existence of God, that America existed based on the divine providence or the government of God, and each president, including Bill Clinton in both of his inaugural addresses, used prayer and petition to call for the continuation of God's good government over the United States of America. And that was simply statecraft. It wasn't practicing religion. And the series of cases that began in the early 1940s, prosecuted by the ACLU and other groups, that pursued it have, in the last 60 years, used the notion of the separation of the government of the church from the government of the state to take God out of government in a very overt way. One of the institutions that was largely untouched until the Bill Clinton effort to, I guess, with women in combat and then homosexuality in the military over the last 30 years, but once the 9/11 occurred, one would suspect that the attack on the military would have been suspended. A lot of people would suggest that these events are not accidental events, that there has been intelligent design behind these events. But in May of 2001, the ACLU filed suit against the Virginia Military Institute, having found a couple of young cadets to sue against the traditional mealtime prayer, grace before meals, and asked that it be stopped. After 9/11, I was watching this, and I actually suspected that they would suspend the lawsuit or they would not continue to prosecute it because, the Congress of the United States, many of our leaders, both spiritual and governmental, including the President of the United States, was calling the nation to prayer. And officer training, of course, all officer training is funded by the government, so I figured they would back off, but they didn't back off. They prosecuted the case, and a Clinton-appointed judge over in Lynchburg, Virginia, ordered the suspension of the mealtime prayer, which goes on at all of the service academies. It's a regular practice throughout the military. We pray every day on the aircraft carriers of the United States Navy. And they ordered the cessation of mealtime prayers, non-sectarian prayers, the typical kind of things that are said every day in the military, ordered them to be stopped. There was an appeal to the Fourth Circuit, the most conservative appeals court in the country. And last year, a three-judge panel ordered that district court be upheld. There was a petition by the Attorney General of Virginia on behalf of the Virginia Military Institute, and it went to an en banc hearing, all the judges in the Fourth Circuit, and it was a 6-6 tie, one more vote, and it would have been reheard, and I'm sure the decision would have been reversed, but thanks to George Bush's permanent appointment of a temporary Clinton appointed judge, there were 12 judges, it should have been only 11 at the time. There was a 6-6 dead tie. The three-judge panel decision stood. It's the first time, not only is the military prayer under attack, it's the first time the notion that 18 and above a year-old students in college should have a limitation on their right to pray. The logic in Engle versus Vitale, when prayer was taken out of public schools, particularly grade school, the notion at that time was that these are impressionable children and it would be improper to pray, but while they had to be compelled to go to a public school. Nobody has ever attacked successfully prayer at the college level, much less in a military setting. I will stop and say this. The military has different rules. It's called military necessity. The Supreme Court, it's the one area the U.S. Supreme Court has constantly deferred, because what it takes to prepare, train, select our personnel, fight and win the nation's wars, in other words, to defend our liberties, has been something that the court is least qualified to get into, and if the military leadership says that something is essential, they defer to the judgment of America's uniformed military leaders. And if you go back and look at our first principles, the first principles are biblical. Second principle, the United States Navy, was divine services would be held aboard our ships twice a day, for example. So we're seeing something that is smacks at the fundamental institution. If you take us back to 1775, 1776, we only had one real institution, public institution. It was the Continental Army and the Continental Navy. And that is our first institution, Commander-in-Chief George Washington. So here in the midst of the so-called War on Terror, when we're concerned about enemies foreign and domestic, the President's calling us to prayer, Congress is calling us to prayer, and the federal courts in Virginia have taken away the right to prayer in officer training at the VMI. The ACLU turned around and attacked the Citadel. The Citadel has been in a fight over women at the Citadel. They deferred, that is, they took prayer out, and then they went after the Naval Academy. And all of these are in the Fourth Circuit's jurisdiction. The Naval Academy, based on some research in the history of prayer in the armed forces we supplied, the Naval Academy refused to knuckle under. So the matter has now been appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. The Attorney General filed his brief on December the 11th. We filed two supporting briefs. The Attorney General of Texas, who was involved in the case involving Lawrence versus Texas, the sodomy case, has, on behalf of a number of southern states, filed a brief in support of VMI, as have a number of distinguished flag and general officers. So I think that there are a number of people not enough people know this is going on, Stan, so being on your radio show is a great opportunity to let Americans know that there's something terribly wrong with the attack on prayer by the courts at a time when the President's calling the nation to pray for the troops and pray for the country and pray for our success in this so-called war on terror.
Well, I think the thing that people have to understand is this is the very attack on the very foundations of the beliefs of this country. And these people are not stupid. They know that there's no wall of separation between church and state. They know it's totally and completely contrived. You know, one of the most interesting things to me was dealing with this issue of Judge Roy Moore and the Ten Commandments monument down there in Mobile, Alabama. There was a recent poll, and this is actually reported in the Humanist magazine, and I discuss it in my January newsletter. CNN USA Today took a poll of a couple of thousand people. 77% of the Americans who were polled supported Judge Roy Moore, supported his right to display the Ten Commandments, and thought that the federal judges and federal courts were wrong. Now, you have to understand that, and I'm sure you do understand this, that there's only a very, very few people who want to destroy the religious foundations of this country, and they know that the people disagree with that. So what they're doing is they've corrupted our courts, they've got their people onto our court system, and they're using the courts to circumvent the will of the American people. And I think that we have to bring out the fact that this is part of an organized effort to destroy the very foundation, the religious foundation of this nation. For you destroy the religious foundation of a nation, you destroy the nation. And that's exactly what the Anti-Christian Lawyers Union, that's the ACLU, and their friends are about to do. And, you know, as you pointed out, certainly the president calls us to prayer. The president repeatedly says, God bless you and God bless America. And yet we can't pray in our military institutions. I mean, you've been on the front lines. You've been in battle. Your family comes from a warrior family. And certainly religion's a very important part of a soldier's life, a soldier's dedication to fight, isn't it?
Well, there's no question about it. I mean, it's an interesting thing that as I began to take a close look at this, and I was given a copy of a prayer book that my uncle had carried. He was the first doctor wounded on Anzio Beachhead, was in the Third Army, was a doctor with Patton in North Africa, Operation Torch, and up through Sicily and then into Italy. His son, my cousin, was killed on Okinawa at the Battle of Aishima the same day Ernie Powell was killed. But he carried this prayer book and inscribed it to me and gave it to me in December of 1966 before I went to Vietnam. And I carried that and kept that prayer book with me and had it near. And when I heard about the attack on VMI and prayer at VMI, I picked up this prayer book, which I hadn't really looked at carefully in a while, and I fingered through. This book had been published and distributed to our troops in World War II and had reprinted and was one of many prayer books distributed in the Korean War. And I began to flip through. The prayers were suggested about some of the greatest men of the 20th century. We're talking about former President Herbert Hoover. We're talking about George Marshall, the General of the Army, Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, won the Nobel Prize. Commandants of the Marine Corps, 3- and 4-star generals, Eddie Rickenbacker, the great pilot, and I looked at here Washington, wonderful, wonderful men, wonderful prayers that they had submitted as prayers that had sustained them in their service and leadership. Omar Bradley said that the West Point, the cadets' prayer he learned at West Point that he memorized and sustained him through Beast Barracks and right on through West Point all the way up to a 5-star. A general said he recommended that this prayer had sustained him, and he recommended it be used by leaders in leading troops in prayer. And I read these prayers, and these are manly prayers. Thomas Holcomb, Commandant of the Marine Corps during the late 30s and right up to 1943, a very short prayer, but a strong prayer. And it ends at, through the merits of thy Son, Jesus Christ our Lord. And these were distributed to troops. I found in my research, we went all the way back to the earliest prayer book we found in the Library of Congress was in 1774. We found there were 67 prayer books that had been distributed to our troops in time of war, some by the government and some by private entities. They were strong. Every time the nation was in peril, there was more calls for public prayer, and that was particularly true in the armed forces. And everybody remembers, many people remember, seeing the story, the true story of the Patton prayer. And that is that George Patton, the commanding general of the Third Army, whose mission was to try to get to Bastogne and had turned his army in the middle of the winter during the Battle of the Bulge, a terrible winter. The Germans had attacked and nearly captured the crossroads town of Bastogne. The 101st Airborne Division, it's been up here and went to Baghdad and performed in Vietnam, is really one of the famous divisions in the United States Army. It was about to be surrounded and destroyed if Patton couldn't get there. The weather was absolutely terrible. There was no air cover. Ground operations had come to a halt. It was clear Patton was not going to reach Bastogne in time. The weather was, by the forecasters, was to be terrible for another week. No air cover, and Patton said, "Damn it, we got to do something. I'm going to pray." And he asked the chaplain to prepare a prayer that the Lord would restrain the weather and give them clear skies so that he could get to Bastogne and relieve the 101st Airborne Division. And the chaplain wrote the prayer, but like had always been the case, George Patton led the prayer. The commanders lead in prayer, then they lead in battle. And George said, if a man can't pray, can't fight, he sure can't lead. And he distributed prayer cards to all the 3rd Division, the 3rd Army, throughout his time as commanding general. And, of course, we all know what happened. The next day, lo and behold, contrary to all the weather forecasts and all the meteorological data that it was available to the U.S. Army in World War II, the weather cleared, and that prayer was answered, and they were able to get the Bastogne and relieve the 101st Airborne Division. Well, that's just one of the literally hundreds and hundreds of famous stories about the efficacy of prayer that I found when I was doing my research for this book. And these prayers were something that was quite common up until the Vietnam War. And I can truthfully say I saw very little of leader-led prayer in Vietnam. It wasn't that it was illegal, or it was just falling into disuse. The general state of our society, which becomes less and less honoring of God, it was true of across the society, and it just got to be something that we leaned on chaplains, not on leaders. So it was a change of custom, not of law. So here we are now in this world war on terror, and the American Civil Liberties Union, B'nai B'rith, the Anti-Defamation League, Citizens United for Separation of Church and State, and the American Jewish Committee are all joining forces to take prayer out of VMI, but they want to take it out of all of our officer training, and once they take it out of officer training, they'll be able to take it out of the military in terms of unit-led prayer. Now, they're not attacking the notion of an individual praying, but in the military, we do things by units. You want to have a unit. It's a team that goes to war. It's not an individual. And the thing that would really sustain people, again, is a leader-led prayer, and particularly as all the examples that have come down to us so many times, George Washington's prayer at Valley Forge, a famous prayer, have sustained American men in extreme circumstances, and we're going to deny them at a time when we're supposed to be successful in so many countries in the war on terror.
Well, I think it's important that people understand that this is an anti-Christian movement. Now, it has nothing to do with some of the organizations are Jewish. They don't represent the Jewish people. They represent another force. And until people begin to understand what that force is, until they've read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and understand who the enemy really is, why we're going to continue losing this battle. And not until the good people of America, the Christians of America, and our allies within the Jewish community stand up and identify the enemy and attack him, where is there any hope of preserving the America we love? Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and I guess this evening, Colonel Ron Ray. And we're talking about the attack on our military institutions, specifically on the Virginia Military Institute, which has been training young men for military, to become military officers for what? A couple hundred years? How long has VMI been around?
1839, but it's interesting that Washington, at the end of the war, before he resigned his commission to return to Mount Vernon, asked all of the generals and the civilian military leaders that had been involved in our successful War of Independence, he said, make recommendations to me about how we should organize to provide for the common defense of America and our way of life. One of the recommendations that came back from the young man who was later going to be Secretary of War, Frank Knox, was that there should be, and each the state should be encouraged to have a state military college in each of the states, the colonies that were going to be states, so that they could train the militia officers in case they needed to be called into service in time of national emergency or war. And VMI was the first one created. It was in Virginia in 1839, and it was created separately from any of the colleges and universities. It was called the Virginia Military Institute, and its history is entirely military. That is, you get 4 years of mandatory officer training, and up until the late 80s, virtually 100% of the officers were commissioned. When they graduated, the cadets were commissioned. So it was just like, they called it the West Point of the South. And in fact, George Patton, for example, went for a year at VMI before he entered West Point because he knew how demanding the first year at VMI was. They call it the rat line. And the stories of of course, the Corps of Cadets actually went to war during the war between the states in May of 1864. A Kentucky Confederate general named Breckinridge said, "May God help us send the boys in." They were the reserve in a battle that took place at New Market, and he committed them to battle. 10 cadets were killed in that battle, but there's a stirring story about their commanding officer, a captain named Preston, who led them in prayer the morning in the darkness before they got up to actually a corps of cadets to fight in a battle in which 10 would give their lives on May 15, 1864. And the story is so central to the theme of what VMI is all about, and we've produced, VMI has produced some of the great military leaders, including George Marshall, who was a first captain of the cadets and rose to the very highest ranks of the United States Army and Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State. And Marshall himself, in the prayers that he put forward in these prayer books, said that he views the spiritual side of a soldier, which must be treated by his leadership, as more important than his physical equipment. And that's Marshall's own words. So here we're seeing, I think, something as fundamental as the attempt to put homosexuality in the military, which is to destroy the virtue and morality which has characterized America's force of arms, going from Washington all the way down. And we're seeing a something that doesn't make any sense. I think you talked about this occult brotherhood of darkness. The notion that we would be trying to send our forces off to fight without a prayer, I can say this, Stan, in my 34 years of reserve and active duty in war and peace, one of the things you would hear say as slang throughout the services, a plane, a ship, a crew, a battalion, a company, a team, a military unit, or a guy who was in a hopeless situation, the characterization would always be made, that ship, that plane, that unit hasn't got a prayer.
Hold that thought for just a moment here. Well, Dr. Stan Back here, our special guest this evening, Colonel Ron Ray. And of course, Colonel Ray was an Assistant Secretary of the Defense in the Reagan administration. He's on the front lines of this battle to try to demonstrate what's really happening, this erosion of the very foundation of America, the religious foundations of a nation. Destroy the foundation of a nation, the religious foundation, you destroy that nation. And that's exactly what this is all about. And we have people on the Supreme Court who have sworn to uphold our Constitution, who are there not to uphold it, to violate the oath that they've taken, and as we see Sandra Day O'Connor and Justice Kennedy saying, oh, we've got to look and see what they're doing over in Europe and the European Union and their rules and their regulations, and to bring our Constitution in line with them. Sandra Day O'Connor should have been immediately arrested and placed in chains if I'd been the president, and I would have impeached her and gotten her off the court immediately. And instead of that, of course, totally ignored the fact that we have Supreme Court justices who violated their oaths, who do not believe in America. And it's not simply Sandra Day O'Connor and Justice Kennedy. There's a whole flock of them there. And if you get my January letter, and I do hope everybody out there in the audience will make it a point to do that, you can just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. As we continue our discussion of Judge Roy Moore and the Supreme Court of the United States, and the fact that we have people on those courts who are there not to uphold the law, but to undermine the very fabric of it. And when we have a lawless courts, we end up having a lawless nation. So we have real problems today. Well, Colonel, what are the chances that the Supreme Court will allow the military to maintain the prayer as they have in the past, or do you think that they're simply going to go along with this agenda? Have we reached that point in the progression of these ideas that the Supreme Court will turn its back on the traditions of America and move us away from even having a military that has primary loyalty to God?
Well, it'll be very interesting. You know, first of all, let me look at it, you know, from a political standpoint, and I would say that, you know, you've got three people on that court, you know, Scalia, Thomas, and the Chief Justice Rehnquist, who I think would be willing to hear this case because of the importance of its merits. That would mean you'd need to pick up one more justice of the other six. It takes four justices to agree to hear a case, and then, of course, if they agree to hear it, there's full briefing and there'd be an oral argument, and then it would take, of course, five justices to agree on an opinion that would overturn what was done in Virginia in the Fourth Circuit. But, you know, it's an interesting thing. We do have a prayer, and this is a matter that those that are so inclined, and, you know, prayer changes the hearts. And I saw it happen on a presidential commission I served on, where a four-star general who was committed to put women in combat aircraft actually voted with us to not put women in. By one vote, that vote was carried.
Now, that for our listeners, that was a commission that was actually set up, I think, by Vice President Cheney at that time.
George Herbert Walker Bush. It was a presidential commission, 15 commissioners, chaired by a former vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Bob Harries, from Texas. And it was to look at, in 1992, at the proper role and assignment of women in the military. And it was a historic day. It was the same day as the presidential election in 1992 in November. And but in point of fact, we had an awful lot of media attention on that commission because everybody expected the Bush commission to authorize use of women in combat across the board, which would then be implemented by whoever was president later on. And, of course, if it was Bill Clinton, you would have the so-called conservative a commission authorizing women in combat, and it would have been carried out by Bill Clinton.
Well, now, who actually appointed the member? I mean, who selected?
Well, the original 15 recommendations came from the Secretary of Defense, Dick Cheney. Right. Went to the White House, and Dick Cheney had selected a number of people, but the vast majority of whom were already on record as favoring women in combat. But the Bush White House and the presidential personnel dropped five of Cheney's most notorious pro-women in combat and put five folks on there whose views were quite different or were unknown. And it turned out I was one of those five that was added at that level. And we ended up going through very close all the way. It was 6, 7, 8 votes going back and forth. And, of course, the star in the crown for the feminist movement and the anti-God forces was women in combat aircraft, and we won that vote by one vote, I think, through prayer. Prayer's going to make a difference in this.
Well, I think we have to recognize that God does rule in the affairs of men if men are worthy of his intervention. We're going to be back here in just a moment or two with Colonel Ron Ray, and we'll welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And we'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest today this evening is Colonel Ron Ray, and we're talking about the attack on the very foundations of our nation, the religious foundations of our nation. And now they've won that battle because there's been no opposition from our leaders. In fact, there's so many things that Congress could have done. Certainly the Constitution, I believe it's Article 3, allows Congress to negate and limit the appellate jurisdiction of the Supreme Court. Some of these justices, Supreme Court justices, should have been impeached. We know that back in 1958, why a conference of state Supreme Court justices got together, and anybody would like to see the report I'm referring to, they got together and they said, you know, the federal Supreme Court is caught up in judicial activism, and what they're doing is in violation of the Constitution. And this was, of course, put out. In fact, the copy I have came from U.S. News and World Report back in 1958. But unfortunately, those judges are long since gone, and most people have forgotten the fact that it was well recognized 50 years ago that what the Supreme Court was doing, they had absolutely no right to do. Are you acquainted with that report, Colonel?
No, I've seen the article, but I haven't read the underlying report. I've seen the U.S. News and World Report, and there was no question. I mean, you could see many signs around in the early 60s. There were signs, impeach Earl Warren, maybe it was even earlier than that. There were calls for impeachment, which you don't even hear anymore. and regardless of the groups that that were calling for them. That is true, Stan. Article 3, Section 2 of the U.S. Constitution, which is about governing the judiciary, makes it crystal clear, absolutely clear, that the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court is subject to such exceptions and regulations as Congress shall make. And it doesn't take a constitutional amendment to change an activist ruling that strikes at the very fabric or foundation of what America really is. All the two houses have to do is by majority vote, simple majority in the Senate and a simple majority in the House, to pass a law restricting the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court from dealing with such things as prayer in the schools or Bible, or even you could do it. Obviously, you wouldn't start because many of our congressmen and senators, even though they either haven't read the Constitution or can't accept the plain meaning of what Article 3, Section 2 really says, I think you'd want to do it with something like a case that I was involved with several years ago where a court actually struck down a page of the congressional record, which obviously would be a violation of the separation of powers. A page from the congressional record was displayed in a courthouse, and a federal judge, a Clinton-appointed federal judge...
Hold that off right there, Colonel. All right, why don't you pick this up? Colonel Ray was talking about how the courts struck down a page from the congressional record. What was that all about?
Well, it was part of the so-called attack on the Ten Commandments, but the display included the official documents of American civil government, and the page of the congressional record had come from the Supreme Court's own edition of the congressional record, and it was a page from February 2nd, 1983, when Congress, responding to the call of the people, wanted to declare 1983 the year of the Bible because of the Bible's importance to the foundations of American law and civil government. And we put up the document of that, the page from the congressional record, created by Article 1, Section 5 of the Constitution, where the debates and proceedings of the Congress. In other words, not a religious document. If anything was more fundamentally a civil document of civil government, it would be the official congressional record of the debates and proceedings that go on. But the court can call good evil, can call black white. The judge said that was a religious document, as was Ronald Reagan's response to the congressional record when he issued a proclamation actually saying, I agree, we should make 1983 the year of the Bible, not because of its importance to religion, but it's because it was the foundation of American law and civil government. And I suggested to a couple of senators, I said, here's your perfect case. This, looking at what the judge did and the ACLU argued should be done, all you have to do is take the congressional record off the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has no jurisdiction to restrict in any way the display, the public display, the reading of the congressional record. Because it would be, I mean, the notion that you could, one branch could censure the official acts of another branch is absolutely ludicrous. But in any event, I just want people to know that that's the jurisdiction question, and Congress has got all the authority. If they want to restrict the right of court, the Supreme Court and the federal courts to deal with the issue of marriage, that could be done by a simple majority of the two houses.
All right, well, let's go to Arlene, who's calling from Santa Cruz, and again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Arlene, do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I have a question for Colonel Ray. Do you, in a long-range opinion, feel that there might be a possible effort here to bring our military into a one military under NATO, whereby our military will not be anymore the military of the United States, but the military of a one-world military?
All right, fine. That's a very legitimate question. Colonel, did you understand Arlene's question?
I did understand the question. I think that it's clear. Folks like Walter Cronkite, in his autobiography published in 1997, he said, I've always been in favor of world government, but when I was the chief spokesman of the news on CBS, I couldn't say that out loud. But he said it, and he said, so that the, going all the way back into the early 1940s, there are some of the Justice Roberts and many of his others were recorded in our nation's leading newspapers as being in favor of world government, which included, of course, some sort of concentration of of military power, and there have been no question NATO is a regional arrangement under the UN Charter, and certainly the UN operations beginning in Korea and America's involvement with UN operations in Korea suggest that that the United States military has been subject to, since the creation of the United Nations, subject to a world or regional arrangement under authorities beyond the Congress and the President and the American people and the U.S. Constitution. So do I think that's a possibility? That's what many famous and well-known figures in American history have throughout the 20th century said was their design and their purpose. Has it become overt yet, and has it been established yet? No, it hasn't been. But the day and the hour is late, and that's the reason that I've taken on these kinds of cases. I think it's very important, Stan, if I might say, in kind of a follow-up to something we were talking about earlier, you know that at the end of World War II, as when World War II looked like it was going to be successful, late 1943, early 1944, one of the things that the Americans did, the American government did, is they sent in social scientists at the Social Science Research Council, funded in part by some of the great foundations, but it was the largest social science research project in history, and it produced a set of books called The American Soldier. Volume 2 was Combat and Its Aftermath, published by Princeton University Press in 1949. And one of the things they were looking at is what motivated soldiers and sailors. And they questioned people in both Pacific and the Europe. This was met all the criteria of good social science research, not like the Kinsey material. And they found out that the number one thing that sustained fighting men in being deployed away from their families in combat and away was prayer. And that wasn't what the study was supposed to produce. It was supposed to talk about things like cohesion and fighting for their buddies, but no. It was the notion of God. It was the notion that that prayers would be answered and that they did pray, and the figures were monumental. Infantrymen, 70% of the enlisted men in the Pacific, 83% in the Mediterranean theory helped a lot. 60% of military officers said that they led their units in prayer, and it sustained the morale in the most extreme circumstances. So we not only have our unbroken experience going all the way back to 1774 in every generation and every war, but we actually have a very progressive, big foundation-funded study that's still on the shelf that conclusively established that was the mainstay of the greatest generation when they fought and won World War II.
And Eileen, I think you're absolutely right. I think there is an organized, orchestrated effort to create one world government. There's a small contingent of people who have a different worldview. They hate America. They hate everything we stand for. They want a one world government under a ruling elite. And, of course, they have to have a powerful military and a powerful police force to keep everybody in line, because most people want their sovereignty. They don't want to be enslaved. They want a rational society, not a return to a feudalistic system. But unfortunately, that's the direction we're headed, unless, of course, we can educate the American people, which is why I do what I do and why Colonel Ray is doing what he's doing. Did you have anything else you'd like to ask yourself?
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment, but first, yeah, they are going to do what they're trying to do it, apparently, unless we stop it, maybe through prayer, or maybe prayer will do it. But they're trying to ruin this country financially. Yeah. We have an economy that may be looking better, but it's a jobless economy, and it's getting worse.
I don't really think it is getting better. I think that they're, you know, what they say, the figures don't lie, but liars figure. And I will tell you that all of these figures that they're putting out are simply not true.
Right.
Ordinarily, it takes 300,000 jobs a month to maintain a vibrant economy and to make up for all the jobs that are lost. In the month of December, when they anticipated that there would be a marked increase in new jobs, the United States economy, the most vibrant economy in the world, produced 1,000 new jobs.
$20 per state.
Right. Well, not very good, I'll tell you. We're in real trouble. God bless you. Thanks so much, Arlene. And please get people listening and try to get them to understand what's going on.
If you could send me the newsletter and put your operator on
well,
again.
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll go ahead and we'll send you perhaps the December newsletter. I think it's a good one. Hang on here, and I'm going to have Jeannie get your name and address, okay?
Thank you.
Good night, and God bless you. Okay, Jeannie, if you wouldn't mind picking that up. And then if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment for the Colonel, give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, Colonel, when will this case be going to the Supreme Court, or when will at least they be discussing whether or not they're even going to hear it?
Well, first of all, yes. I think that there'll be a decision in May or June as to whether they're going to hear the case. In other words, it's submitted to the court for what they call a petition for a writ of certiorari. If you'd like to see the briefs and the history of the case, the history that we've put together, the prayers that I was talking about, you can find most of this information on firstprinciplespress.org. That's firstprinciplespress.org. You can download the appendix to the brief, the arguments that we've made, and the history of prayer that's summarized there is I've never found it in any other place. And the power of those prayers. In fact, to Stan, I will tell you something interesting as a byproduct of this. How many times we hear people that get out and Christians are out and they get an opportunity to pray at the Rotary Club or some service group or some public place, and they all want to be afraid to offend and afraid to pray in the name of Jesus Christ. And I found it been wonderful for me when I've had those opportunities to pull out this appendix to this brief. Pull out a prayer that was just prayed by Eddie Rickenbacker during World War I, or prayers that were offered by Douglas MacArthur, who recommended the Lord's Prayer was the best prayer to be read to our soldiers and used by our soldiers. And I've said that here's a man that prayed during the Korean War and led our forces in a certain place, and he recommended this be distributed to the fighting forces of the United States in the Korean War, and I read the prayer in its historic context. And I've seen people grind their teeth and be entirely unhappy with me, but it's very difficult to put a historic prayer out and to pray a prayer that was distributed to our fighting forces in a time of national peril, and nobody's ever challenged me from doing such a thing. So I think we're not aggressive, we're not well informed, and we don't understand that prayer does prepare the way, but action possesses the land, and there's a lot that the individuals can do, and one of the greatest lies that's told is that I'm only one person and I can't make a difference. And so I would have you take a good look at this. We ask for your prayers. We need your support. Take a good look at what's going on. Look at that website, First Principles Press, LES.org, press.org, and take a look at that, and I think through prayer, like I say, Stan, this is the first case in the country. Take the military aspect out of it. This is the first time a court of appeals has said there's a problem with prayer at the college or university level, where you have people there voluntarily, they pay their own way, and they're over 18 years of age, and of course they've reached the age of majority or maturity by law, and there should be, and there has been, no restriction on the ability to pray, except, you know, the politically correct attitudes. But there's been no legal constraint on there, and I think that may in and of itself be the basis upon which the Supreme Court decides to hear this case, because there's at least four other court of appeals that have had prayer in a college setting, and they've all ruled against a restriction on prayer in the college setting because of the age and maturity of the students.
All right, well, now in this situation you have on your website, do you have the complete list of the prayers from the prayer book, or just a few of them?
No, the whole appendix is on. No, they're selected, but I think they certainly suggest we list all the prayer books. All 67 prayer books are listed in the appendix.
I'm speaking though of your prayer book. I mean, the prayers that were in your prayer book, are they
many of the prayers are in there. I think there's probably 70 or 80 specific prayers, and the man who offered them up, you know, General Cates, who was a commandant of the Marine Corps right after World War II, he said, my prayer at Reveille will prove most useful to all of those who use it. It guided me throughout my career, and it's a very short prayer. My God, I offer to thee this day all that I can think or do or say, uniting it with what was done on earth by Jesus Christ, thy Son. Those are the types of prayers, some longer, some shorter. General Mark Clark, General Lucius Clay, Secretaries of the Army, even Dean Acheson. Dean Acheson, as Secretary of State, recommended a book from the Common Prayer be distributed to the fighting forces in the Korean War, and it's prayed in the name, Thy Holy Name, through Jesus Christ our Lord. So it's Omar Bradley, a very strong prayer. Eisenhower, several of them suggested that, in fact, Eleanor Roosevelt suggested the 23rd Psalm from the King James Bible was as good a prayer as one can be offered. The Valley of the Shadow of Death, I will fear no evil. For thou art with me, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. So it's a really, I guess what I'm saying is I had an instinct and was led by that prayer book to take a close look at the history of prayer, and I was really stunned. Thought I knew something about history, and I had no idea how important prayer was throughout the American military history.
Well, I think it's going to be fascinating. I'm certainly going to go there. And that's First Principles. Is it First Principles Press?
First Principles Press.
FirstPrinciplesPress.com.
.org.
.org, okay.
.org.
Let me recommend that to you. Let's go to Rose, who's calling in from New York. Hi, Rose. How are you doing?
Yes, good evening. I hope I'm not taking you astray on the topic, or you've done this already, because I tuned in late. But I've been hearing, and I would like to know if it's rumor or truth, as much as you know, that in Almogado, New Mexico, we have the German military, guarding our bases, and then in other places like Georgia, we've paid $2 million to hire people to guard our bases because we just don't have enough men.
I really can't comment on that. Can you comment on it at all, Colonel?
Well, it seems to me, and my recollection is, back during the early days of the Clinton administration, there was, I believe it was in New Mexico, that there was an air base out there that was turned over for the use of the German Air Force. And there was questions raised. There were a couple of articles written about it. I think you and I might have even done a radio show, Stan, and talked about that, but I never saw much of reporting on it. It was basically secondhand, but there were news accounts that they'd actually run the flag up down there, and they were running German military airplanes out of an air base in New Mexico. But I haven't heard anything about that in 6, 7, 8 years.
It could very well still be there, but it really can't come
in. The reason that I even brought it up is because I was speaking to somebody in a business transaction, and it came back that, gee, there's a lot of Germans retiring out here, tremendous amount. And then I recently saw articles about us paying money to have, I think it was in Georgia, and then again Fort Hood. There was something about Fort Hood with the, people guarding our fort. So
well, really can't comment on it, but if you have anything on it, Rose, please let us know.
That raises, Stan, that raises the old State Department memorandum, which was signed into law, I guess, by John Kennedy. State Department 7277, which had to do with disarmament. Certainly this transformation, everybody keeps talking about in the military, that you can do more with less. You know, we have about the half of the size of the operational forces we had when we won Desert Shield, Desert Storm. Clinton cut the military way down, and George W. Bush and these guys, these neoconservatives, seem dedicated to doing anything overusing the Guard and Reserve. We've used the Guard and Reserve more in the last 20 years than we've used in the previous history of the country. And so there's real questions about what transformation really means, and you can't keep people on active duty beyond their terms without creating it seems to me a morale problem. I've heard the testimony of the Joint Chiefs before Congress this past week, but I wasn't convinced.
No, basically you're speaking of the fact that these men were signed up for a 2 or 3 year stint, and then when it's time for them to get out, they say, oops, sorry, well, of course, we have a contract with you, but we've got to just insist that you stay on in the name of national security. And a lot of these people need to get home to take care of their business, who are willing to go over for a certain specific time, have been extended indefinitely. And, of course, I think they call it involuntary servitude, and I agree with you. I think this is going to be terrible for the morale of our troops over there. In fact, I think we have real problems with our morale, because I think a lot of the troops are beginning to wonder, what are we really fighting for?
Well, I think that, you know, there's it's pockets, but I think that the treatment of Guard and Reserve guys coming home, that they were having to wait extended periods of time in very cramped places because they were going to get, before they could release them from active duty, these were men that had been wounded. Some of them had various kinds of disease and injury, and they were trying to be sure they understood what the nature of that was. So there were people who were waiting for days, weeks, and in several cases for months to get care, to be evaluated before they could be released from active duty and returned to service. Because if there's a service-connected disability that has that goes over with you later in your life, you're entitled to some sort of disability pension. So they want to know what your actual military, your actual physical ability is when you depart the service, and they want an accurate record of your physical qualifications when you leave the service. But there were some real horror stories in Georgia, even down at Fort Knox, Kentucky, about, you know, no air conditioning and men in hallways waiting to be evaluated by a team of a medical team. And so whether that was isolated, and you know, there were some medical news reports, and whether that was isolated or widespread was hard to get a handle on. But I think that we're hearing enough articles from serious people, I'm sure you've seen them, says that it looks like we've got serious people, Charlie Rangel and others in the Congress, but also in the executive branch, have been quietly suggesting that we may have to consider a draft.
And I think that's a rather frightening thing, because I don't think we should ever force young men to go off to fight overseas. Now, I think everybody has an obligation to defend America here, but I don't think we're defending America when we go halfway around the world to Vietnam to fight a no-win war, or to Korea to fight a no-win war, or halfway around the world in the other direction to fight in Iraq for whatever we're fighting for. But anyway, somebody had called in and wanted to know if our listeners don't have a computer or can't get on the internet. Is there any other way to get those prayers that you were talking about?
Sure. They can write us at First Principles Press, care of P.O. Box 1136, Crestwood, Kentucky 40014. Or give us a call at 1-800-837-0544, and for a modest printing cost, we'd be happy to send them a copy of the briefs with the prayers in the back and the history of prayer. And but if they can get on the website, it's all there. The last brief we filed just 2 weeks ago may not be up until next week, but it will be up on firstprinciplespress.org, and I think they'll find some other information about the foundations, the biblical foundations of American law and civil government, and the attack on exemplary conduct. You know, women in combat, homosexuals in the military, but more importantly, I think a lot of history that most Americans are unaware of.
Now, have you looked at the Attorney General's brief? Is the Attorney General's brief attacking this from the right point of view, from the point of view that the Supreme Court has ordinarily left these issues to the military rather than on some point of view that really will not be effective?
Great question, Stan, and it's a stunning thing to me. Of course, when you're a friend of the court, you need permission of both of the parties. I got permission from the ACLU to file a brief in the Fourth Circuit, and similarly in the Supreme Court. The Attorney General of Virginia and his Solicitor General have defended this case under the rubric of the Lemon Test, that is the religious church-state cases that go back into the early 40s and they've come down. Everson and right on down the line, and those cases, I think, the religion clauses of the First Amendment don't govern the United States military, whether it's a state military training facility like VMI is, or whether it's a military school like West Point or Annapolis. All military training is state supported, and I guess there's a doctrine called military necessity that I thought was a winner and should have been argued early, and that they. Solicitor General, to his credit, had won a case in the Supreme Court on a minute of silence, whether prayer or otherwise, in Virginia, and won it in the Supreme Court. And I think he believed that he would be successful, if not in the trial court, in front of a Clinton-appointed judge in the Fourth Circuit, which everyone in the bar says is the most conservative circuit court of appeals in the country. But in fact, they got a three-judge panel that ruled against him, even though we got a very favorable opinions from six of the 12 judges, but I've been somewhat disappointed that they continued to press the same standard, because when you play the game, establishment clause and free exercise, somebody on our side said free exercise of religion, that should govern. And the other side, the ACLU or their comrades, will say, no, that's establishment, and of course there's no real standard there. It sets up a dialectic, and the judges can do what they want. But we made an argument under Marsh versus Chambers, which is a Supreme Court case that I thought was rightly decided, which said if there's a practice that existed at the time of the founding, which the founding fathers were aware of, and it continues unbroken to the present time, then obviously there can be nothing wrong with that, and it's a historical exception to any of the post-1940 Supreme Court rulings that began to create the notorious separation of church and state decisions.
Well, we're just about out of time, Colonel, but I'm really going to be very anxious to see how this develops, and I hope you'll keep us posted.
I certainly will, and Stan, it's always a privilege and a pleasure to be with you, and I wish you Godspeed in your work.
God bless, and we'll be talking to you later. In fact, I'm going to go to First Principles Press and pull down those prayers. I think that's important. In fact, well, we'll talk to you about that later. But right now, until we see you again, why, may the Lord be with you.
Thanks a lot, Stan.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest has been Colonel Ron Ray. The board's all lit up right now. I'm afraid we're going to a different subject in the next hour. I wish Colonel Ray could stay with us, but we already have another program scheduled. This is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and quite frankly, we could use your help in what we're doing to try to reach people across America with the truth. So if you believe there's a problem, you believe we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political and judicial battlefield, we hope many of you will give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, where you can pick up our programs at 5-HIV-WAR, where you can actually pick up our programs on a regular basis. Give us a call. We'd love to have you join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Our website, RadioLiberty.com. Don't forget, we have a number of exciting new videos that you may want to get. Diaprax, which is the story of the church growth movement. Megiddo, which is the story of what's happening geopolitically today. So until Monday, we'll be back with you again. Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you. Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, or the views of our callers. And if you want to call us, our telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us one of my favorite guests and a personal friend. His name is Dave Wegener. Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I'm doing just fine. Thank you for having me on again this evening.
And, of course, Dave has a ministry. It's called Hope for America. He had a very good position with a major American corporation and gave that up, about 8 or 10 years ago? How long ago?
Been about, a little over 10 years now.
Went off to try to educate the American people, wife, children. I just went off living on faith to try to awaken people to the fact we're going to lose America if there are not enough people out there willing to become involved. And he's put together a lot of wonderful videos, and we carry just about every single one of his. You can find them on our website. Now, we'll, of course, give you his address here a little later so you can get in touch with David Wagner. David certainly keeps his finger on what's going on in the country today, and there are all sorts of things. We had a caller earlier talking about the economic situation in our country. America is about to be destroyed economically, and it's not happening by accident. It's happening by intent. They know exactly what they're doing. Globalization was designed to impoverish the American people, to transfer the wealth of the American people to people throughout the world, to gradually lower our living standards, perhaps even precipitously, to destroy the value of the dollar, and that's how you don't have to pay back all the debts that you've made. And it's a very, very clever scheme. But the one thing is, they can't let the American people know that this is intended, so they've got to say, oh, everything's happening. We just never thought this was going to happen. Gee, shucks. How did that happen? I mean, why is it that when we simply ship all of our jobs overseas, there are no jobs here in America for the American people? Now, why is it? But look, things aren't so bad. Look at all the cheap things we're getting. We can buy all these things at Walmart from China. And after all, if we were to put tariffs on, it would just cost the American people more money. And then, of course, things would be higher. We wouldn't live as well as we do. But nobody ever talks about all the people who have lost their jobs. Nobody talks about the fact that here in California, if you lost your job and you got a new job, on average, your income is down 40%. In other words, you're getting 40% less than you did before. If you were making $50,000 a year before, you're making about $30,000 a year right now. These figures, anybody wants to see the article, we have it. This is what's going on all across America. Of course, the average is only 21% for the country as a whole. It's just here in California, it's a lot worse. And they tell you, oh, the economy is going to come back. I mean, things are getting better over in Silicon Valley. And, of course, look at all the money that's being invested over there. But where's the money coming from? It's coming from the artificially inflated stock market. People are cashing out and putting their money into venture capital. And so many of these new companies that are coming online now, they're going to crash when the whole economy crashes. The International Monetary Fund has come out within the last 3 weeks and said, the current economic policies of the United States threaten the economy of the entire world, and if America goes down, the whole world goes down. And everybody tells us, times are great, you know, George Bush is doing a great job. Isn't it wonderful that he gave us a tax cut and then increased government spending and ran up the debts even further? Well, let's talk about what you want to talk about tonight.
Well, Dr. Stanley, you must have an office bug because... You know, I do research every day, as you do, and I go through two or three papers, and since last time we talked, I thought I'd cover two or three subjects, and I have a whole bunch of other articles if time remains. I doubt if it will with you and I both talking, but the first subject I wanted to talk about was the economy, and I have a number of articles here in front of me that sort of show what's happening. Again, the globalization is going to be a three-legged stool, more or less. It's going to have your political power controlling the military, and then you're going to also have your spiritual aspect, your one world religion, and then they're going to use the economy to pretty much tie it together, because there'll be a day where which you cannot buy or sell unless you take the mark of this world leader that's ready to come on the scene. So the economy should be important to everybody. God has given us resources. We should use them wisely. Wherever we do, whatever we have, we should store up our treasures in heaven first and foremost, and then we should definitely be careful how we spend our money, be as wise as serpents, yet as gentle as doves, the Bible says. But I've got a couple articles. One article here says, data hints at possible U.S. recovery without added jobs. I can't believe that anybody would believe that lie, but it's been perpetrated that we're having a recovery without the added jobs, and that just amazes me how anybody can think that that we're going to have a strong economy when the basis of any economy is people working and being able to pay their for new cars or new or pay their rent payments or pay their laundry bills or pay the time to go out to movies or wherever it may be. When they start losing jobs, they aren't able to do that, and then that is just a snowball effect.
Well, I'll tell you, Dave, somebody once said it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough and convincingly enough, most people are going to believe it.
You know, and I think that's what they're doing with that, Dr. Stanton. And just to show you how they're manipulating this, here's another article. It says, report lifts dollar against the yen. Now, read this clearly here. It says, the dollar rose against the yen in Tokyo on Monday, and this is on 120 of this year, January 20th. The dollar rose against the yen in Tokyo on Monday after Japan had sold more than 56 billion in yen. So far this month, more than a quarter of last year's total. So they're continuing to buy dollars, sell yen to keep the yen low. Again, it's a manipulation of by these various world leaders, by the various world governments, and just to show you how deep trouble we're in economically, I've got a tape I want to play. I think Janie Soderman, the one that called me earlier tonight, she's the one that sent me this, and I just have a real short clip. It's only about 40 seconds or a minute of an interview where Pete Peterson, he's the head of the Federal Reserve, the Federal Reserve Chairman of New York, and listen to what he says about the debt. And the Bible says a borrower is a slave to the lender, and a nation of borrowers is a nation of slaves. So let's listen to this particular clip.
Both parties are talking about something called a trust fund. When they talk about Social Security, they talk about Medicare. You mentioned the payroll taxes to support those trust funds.
The trust fund is an oxymoron of great quality. You shouldn't be trusting it because there's nothing there, and it is not funded. The unfunded liabilities, which don't appear on our balance sheet, Lou, are $25 trillion, twice the size of our entire economy. So we go around saying we got $6-7 trillion of debt. We actually, with honest accounting, and we just passed Sarbanes-Oxley,
Absolutely.
It's about $30 trillion.
Okay,
now that's Pete Peterson. Actually, he was the CEO of Lehman Brothers for many years, and then he was all sorts of presidential commissions. Last thing I heard, he was with Blackstone, and of course with the Concord Coalition. But he's certainly one of the movers and shakers, longtime director of the Council on Foreign Relations, certainly one of the elite who knows what's really going on behind the scenes, and I think it's really very, very interesting that he is trying, or at least is talking openly, about the fact that, for all intents and purposes, America is bankrupt and there's just no way out.
Well, when you talk $30 trillion, Dr. Stan, that's a lot of money. In anybody's book, there's no way I don't think the human mind can even understand how much that is.
I think $1 billion is a lot of money.
Yeah, I try to explain in my presentations when I travel around that 1 million seconds, for example, is about 12 and a half days. 1 billion seconds is 35 years, and 1 trillion seconds is 35,000 years. So it's considerably more than 1 billion, and a lot more than considerably more than 1 million. And
by the time you got up to about $30 trillion, while you're really, really talking about real money.
That's what somebody said one time, and it may be sort of funny, and I think some of these people sort of laughed about they spent their children's inheritance, but it isn't going to be funny when the day comes that their children don't have the freedoms and liberties, they don't have the ability to work like they did. Because we haven't been the watchman, Dr. Stan. We haven't stood on that wall and sounded the alarm, and people don't really want to listen. A lot of them don't. And unfortunately, there is a day of reckoning. When you're in debt like that, like the Bible says, a borrower is a slave to the lender. And they're manipulating our markets every day, whether it be the stock market or the commodities markets or whatever they are. They continue to manipulate those. We've got executive orders and articles that show that from time to time. But as far as the economy goes, I got another article here. It says jobless count skips millions. Now, again, they show the jobless rate is people that apply. Now, after a person doesn't find a job and his Social Security benefits, or not Social Security benefits, but his unemployment benefits have run out, he would not be able to apply anymore. So they take him off the list. And you mentioned it right as we came in the program. Well, not this, but this is another article that just shows you the companies are closing. Levi Strauss closes its two last U.S. plants. Where are they going? Well, here it says Mexico is panicking over a flood of Chinese goods. It's concerned. Another article about Mexico gains disappear without globalization. When NAFTA came into effect down there, they got a lot of new jobs, but they're disappearing and they're quickly moving to China. Here it says Mexico loses U.S. market to China. Again, Dr. Stan, even they're aware of it, a place where they get about $3 to $4 a day in the manufacturing plants. And of course, if you're a manufacturer, you'd want to move it over there where they have slave labor. Many of those people are brothers and sisters in Christ, probably would make us look bad over here as far as Christians, because they're willing to die for their faith in Jesus Christ. But because they talk about their Lord or they talk against the government, whichever it may be, they find themselves in these slave labor facilities working for bosses that work with the U.S. with governments and corporations around the world. Again, it's really a sad day that we would not hurt when part of the body hurts. God says that we're to hurt when they hurt, and let me tell you what, they're hurting. We're continuing to profit from their goods, because their goods come over here at a lesser rate. That's why we haven't seen inflation, because most of the jobs and the manufacturing jobs have been moved over to China or to India and various other places. Here it says in an article, there's no job that is America's God-given right anymore. We have to compete for jobs. And this is the executive there, the lady executive of Hewlett-Packard. She's saying there's no God-given right for American jobs. We have to compete with these $2, $3, $4 an hour labor plus the slave labor. Here's another article, IBM to export highly paid jobs to India and China. And my contention always has been that it will be China and Russia. That's about, China and India. That's about 2.5 billion people on the face of the earth. It seems like they're moving the manufacturing jobs over to China, where they have the slave labor. The people are used to working for $1 or $2 a day. India, they seem to be moving some of the tech jobs. Bank of America moved their loan department or their loan management department over there. China, here it says IBM moved theirs to India. And again, I think that's where it's going to be. But here's what we were talking about earlier about globalization. It says China's growth spurt is a concern. It says here China also has become an increasingly important pillar of the global economy, turning itself into the world's factory.
And I think that's really important that people understand that this is a long-range plan. And reading the Washington Post about a week ago, they were talking about what's the world going to be like 10 years from now, and they commented that the industrial production will all be over in China and in India. So this is exactly what they want. And then, of course, they're so concerned that there'll be a backlash against globalization here, that the American people will realize what's coming off. And so they keep emphasizing, well, you know, certainly we may be losing these jobs, you know, that IBM is taking their jobs over to India, where instead of paying $100,000 a year from a programmer, why they only have to pay $10,000. But look at the advantage for the American people. Now, look at the advantage for the American people, because that way the software is going to be so much cheaper, and you can buy it so much cheaper in the United States because they can produce it so much cheaper. And they say this with such flair, you know. And the problem is they must think the American people are awfully stupid, or maybe they are awfully stupid, because, you know, if you've lost your job, you're not going to be in a position to buy the cheap goods, and more people are losing their jobs, and if they do get a job, it's going to have a lower income. And as I pointed out, here in California, on average, 40% decrease in income. This is no laughing matter. They're going to impoverish the American people, and if the American people don't wake up, and certainly they're never going to find out what's happening from Rush Limbaugh or Bill O'Reilly or Dan Rather or Tom Brokaw. That's why we have to get the word out as best we can, Dave.
You're absolutely right, and it is amazing to me how silent the majority is when it comes to things that are definitely going to affect their children and their grandchildren, and probably most of them. I think the timing's such that most everybody listening will be affected one way or another, but definitely our children will receive the brunt of it. They will not have the privileges and liberties we have. And they have everything in place. If you go back and check who your IRS is associated with, the people that legally take your money every year. And I get a kick out of people. They say, boy, I got a lot of money back from the government this year. Well, that was their money. The government held it all year, and they just gave them a small portion of it back. But they're convinced they're being taken care of by the government by giving a portion of their money back. It just amazes me how some people think. But anyway, the IRS is tied in with the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Group. They're all part of the same agency out of Washington. So there's a time that maybe the American people will find out what's going on, but it's going to be too late. They have everything in place through Homeland Security and these other things that are definitely going to affect every single one of us, Dr. Stan.
Well, let me tell you some of the good things, though, Dave. One of them is that starting as of Monday, this program, this two-hour program every evening, is going to be on shortwave, as well as the stations that were already being serviced. And we've got to get a tremendous lineup on WHRI. I do a program from 3 to 5, and then, of course, they go to Southwest Radio Church and Lester Summerall and Butch Paul, and then I'm on again for another 2 hours. So if we can get people to start listening and getting others to listen, we can reach everybody here in the western half of the United States by shortwave, because shortwave propagates very well in the dark, and we're going to have an opportunity to reach people if we can just get them listening. We can get everybody in Los Angeles. They need to get a shortwave radio. They need to get a good aerial. And now we have a means of communication where we can begin to educate people about the foundations of our freedom and how they're being taken away from us. So I'm really more encouraged than I've been in a long time.
And that is good news. I mean, that's excellent news that they'll be able to hear the truth through the programs that you put out, because the truth is the only thing that's going to set people free. But I would recommend the people that hear the truth, they would act upon it. They wouldn't just listen. They would find out whether the programs you put on the air are truth, or whether it's a bunch of sensationalism or whatever it may be, because I believe it's going to affect them. I believe they're going to be held accountable as stewards by God himself for what they've done with this land he gave us as a free land. So, again, it's more than just listening to the radio. You have resources, Dr. Stan, that nobody else has in the world. You have resources from all types of subjects. So whatever the subject the listener may be interested in, whether it's education or whether it's about the political aspects, or whether it's historical aspects or monetary or whatever, you've got different speakers. You've got the various ungodly programs going on with vaccinations and health and all the other things, how the depopulation programs that are put in place. You've got the bigger pictures when you have speakers that talk about basically the New World Order. It covers the whole spectrum. You've had speakers on probably every subject you could possibly have over the last number of years, and especially with five programs a day. So there's no reason they wouldn't call Radio Liberty and ask what resources you have, or ask for some kind of printout and take those resources to their friends, because unless there's action, you can listen all day, but unless there's action, because I guarantee you these people are taking over the world are taking action. They're pooling their money together. They work day and night. They seem to be relentless in what they do, Dr. Stan, and yet there seems to be a silence within this group of people that call themselves Christians. Now, I guess they've sort of disassociated themselves with having to do anything, because they think they're so spiritual that this isn't any of their duty. Well, I'll tell you what, they're so spiritual, they're good for nothing if they aren't doing anything, because God says faith without works is dead. And those works are living a righteous life. Those works would obviously be to warn your children about what's ahead. Those works would be certain things like helping the poor, the orphans, the widows. Those works would be about speaking up for the helpless, like the unborn, and speaking up for those the euthanasia programs that are coming on the scene. Those works are all types of things. They're forms of righteousness is what God talks about. He says you're going to get the crown of righteousness, and it's very unfortunate many people have just been content to go 1 hour to church, hold their hands up and say, God, I love you, and do nothing, because I believe that God says he's going to say to many of them, he says, not all who call me Lord, Lord, and many people are calling him Lord, Lord today, not all who call me Lord, Lord will enter the kingdom of God, only those that are doing the will of the Father. The will, obviously, is to believe on him who he sent, to love one another, to live righteously, and to stand up for truth. Because the first fruit of the Spirit is righteousness, truth, and goodness. That's the first fruit of the Spirit, Ephesians 5:9. Righteousness is how we treat each other. obviously, if we love people that are around us, we will be the watchmen that God's called us to do. You would be very neglected. You'd neglect your family if you didn't warn them if a storm was coming in. And let me tell you what, Dr. Stan, there's a storm coming on this land, and so I'm asking the people that are listening to call Radio Liberty and ask what they can do, what resources you have, to take those resources to their community, to their local politicians, take them to their pastors, take them every place, because you have, again, everything, every type of resource that you could ever ask for, not just to learn, not just to sit there and have this knowledge. As I tell people, Dr. Stan, in my presentations, if you just sit here and learn about this and don't have Jesus Christ as your Lord and King and don't do what he's told you to do, you're going to be the smartest people in hell. You're going to be there with the people that I'll be exposing tonight. And
all right, the only reason, David, I want to just ask you, you had a couple of wonderful videos on what happened on September 11th, and one of those you asked us not to distribute. You were going to redo that again. Do you have those redone, those available?
You know, I've got one of them redone, The Day That Changed America Forever. That one had just a couple changes. The one that called Welcome to World War III/New World Order was right on target. I was just a little presumptuous, I believe. I thought that the Iraqi situation would probably be more than it was, so I'll show how there was no war, but there is a future campaign definitely in plans, and that was the beginning of World War III. I believe that with all my heart.
Right, the one, though, that The Day That Changed America Forever, that is available?
That's available. I think you have that one, Dr.
Is that
Stan?
The one that shows the buildings coming down?
That one shows them very clearly how they come down, and that shows how clearly each one of them, how the Building 7, for example, how the very top floor of Building 7 goes down before the other floors. And supposedly there was a fire on the 7th and 12th floor. So
I'm sorry, you mean the top floor comes down or the bottom floor comes down?
The penthouse comes down first. You see it going down first. And then, obviously, the bottom floor and the center of the building goes down, and then the whole building comes down. It's just...
Well, you know, first, there's some new information that's come out. Joel Skousen's talked about it, that the people who were sent in, of course, to evaluate what happened, had found that at the very base of the major towers, where they have the major supports, I think there were four major vertical supports that were the very foundation of the building, there was molded steel. Now, the only way you could get molded steel would not be from a fire. You would have to have thermite charges, something like that, to burn them. And obviously, if the reports are true, and I see no reason to think that they're not, somebody destroyed the foundation of those buildings, which is why then they would come down in that pancake fashion that they did. In other words, the bottom was gone, and once that had started, why, of course, then things collapsed in a telescoping method. And the fact that that has been totally ignored by the radio media, this would explain why Building 7 came down.
I mean, yeah,
we
can
understand why perhaps the Twin Towers came down, although there was always some question as to what really happened. But why did Building 6 come down? Why did Building 7 come down? We have never had, in all the history of America, fires in buildings where these have come down in this manner. It just doesn't happen.
That's absolutely right, Dr. Shannon. As far as the molten steel at the bottom, anybody can remember back, that there was actually a smoldering. They put tons of water on that building. The smoldering of that building took place for almost a week later. Now, that wasn't jet fuel that was smoldering. That was molten steel underneath there, and you don't have molten steel from jet fuel burning on steel beams. So it's very clear that what we saw wasn't really what really took place, and I show that very clearly on The Day That Changed America Forever. And literally, Dr. Stan, that was a very important day. It was a very important day to us and our children. I've got an article here in front of me, and it showed the cartoons. And these aren't, sometimes they tell truth by trying to make it levity and laughter. Well, it's not very funny, because this cartoon says Ashcroft to Ashes, and it has the Bill of Rights shredded. That was put out in the LA Times on 12/31 of last year. And that's exactly what's taken place. That's what exactly is continuing to take place. There's an article on 9/11 that breaks my heart, Dr. Stan, because I put myself in some of these people's shoes from time to time, whether they be people that are being slaughtered or other parts of the world, and I know God cares about them too. But here it says, most families seek 9/11 aid. It says here 73 lawsuits have been entered against airlines or other parties. Only 73 people did not take the bribe. And for those that did, I'm not putting them down, because it would have been very tempting for me because the average family got $1.8 million. That was paid for by you and I and by our government, so they would not try to find out what happened at that building. It's the first time that ever took place in American history that they would pay off the victims of an incident like that. And I thank God for those 73 people. Are not going to get their $1.8 million that everybody else is, but they would rather have the truth than receive $1.8 million.
Well,
Praise God for that.
We've got Paul calling here from Capitola, has a question about Building 7, or perhaps a statement. Hi, Paul. Did you have a question or comment?
Just a comment about Building 7. Recently, I was listening to a program where they were playing a documentary from PBS called America Rebuilding. It was about rebuilding the complex of the World Trade Center. And at the end of the documentary, they have Larry Silverstein, the owner of the complex, talking about how they got a call from the fire chief that there's been so much destruction, there's a fire, that we decided to pull the building. And he's also, we got the guys together and we pulled it. And that's an industry term for demoing the building. So he admitted he demoed it on this documentary. And then, to top that off, two Secret Service agents died in that building when they detonated it. There's so many questions about this that I can't believe people aren't questioning. And I don't know. That's my main comment.
All right, I think that's fascinating.
Is this Paul or who is this, Larry? Or?
No, this is Paul calling.
Paul, okay, Paul. That's a good point. I read that the other day, but I think it's even more sinister than that. I believe the charges were planted in that building before Silverstein told them to go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
I believe they wanted to destroy that building because I believe they used that as a command center to help guide those planes into the North and South Tower.
Yeah, there's no way during a massive emergency you'd have time to set up a perfect demolition charge and not destroy any other building around. It would just be impossible. But anyway, that's all.
Right. I think that was just a decoy to send you on another trail, another rabbit trail to what really didn't happen. But if you really knew what happened, that building was set up to be destroyed, as well as they used it as a command center, I believe.
Well, we know, of course, that there is currently an investigation going on, and the Bush administration is doing everything they can to block providing the information needed. And then, of course, the 10 people on this commission have asked for a 60-day extension because the president has blocked getting the information to them, and the president says, oh, no, you can't have any more information, because, of course, if you had another 60 days, why, then the release of your report would be coming too close to the election. So we want that report out now. And what callous disregard, what are they covering up? If there's nothing to cover up, then why is it the administration is doing everything they can to block people from testifying? If they can get people to testify at all, they have somebody come in with them. They can't testify on their own. There's got to be somebody there watching, getting every word that they say. And, of course, if they say anything they're not supposed to, they could end up being sent to prison. Because for revealing state secrets. Don't think for one minute these people aren't threatened. You know what you call a government employee who wants to tell the truth? Unemployed. We'll be back in just a minute with our special guest, Dave Wagner. Welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Dave Wagner from Hope for America Ministries. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, I'd like to continue on the subject that one cartoon that showed the Bill of Rights, because this is going to affect all the listeners. Whether they see it happen tomorrow or next week or next year, it's going to happen. They're putting these laws in place not just for fun and games. They're putting them on design literally enslave the American people. Eventually, the American people and the peoples of the world will be enslaved. Supreme Court has been doing almost everything that the Bush administration has asked for since 9/11, and like you said, the Bush administration has done everything to impede the investigation of what took place from day one, as much as giving the families $1.8 million each so they won't seek after what the truth was. But here's an article. They're talking about this this dirty bomb case. It says, soon the Supreme Court will determine whether national security justifies the detention of American citizens indefinitely and without charges. And I believe they'll go just like they have with many of the other cases that the Supreme Court's gone along with. They've gone with the roadblocks here. They said it's all right to have roadblocks for whatever reason, just to fish for unrelated suspected activities. They can just set up roadblocks for any reason anymore. So I believe they'll soon be able to arrest American citizens as they choose to. There's a CAPS II program that was just in the news a while back. I got an article here. It says Mr. Orwell, that's George Orwell, they're talking about in this head of this article, report to the ticket counter. And again, this has to do with information awareness offices. This has to do with all the technology. They've been putting databases on the various American people and people really from around the world. And soon you will not be able to fly. I heard a report. I haven't checked it out yet, but I heard in Boise, Idaho, they're already working this program, checking. They're using it. And what you do when you report to the counter, you either get a red flag, which means you can't fly, and possible arrest. A yellow flag where they're going to do some more searching, or a green flag that you can get on the airplane because you've checked out your database, you've done everything they've told you to do, you haven't gone against the government in any way. Again, the air marshals aren't there just by accident, that they're putting more air marshals. In fact, it says here, a security demands irk Europeans, passenger list, armed marshals raise tension. They have the same thing we're doing. This is a global program. This isn't just an American program. This is a globalized program that's going to affect every single one of us, Dr. Stan, and we must stand up now. It should be a time of sense of urgency, but I believe that over the years people have become just complacent. They've just become, they sit back and think that somebody else is going to take care of it, or it isn't really going to happen. I've been so amazed by the lack of inaction. I just really love, there are people out there, let me tell you, Doctor, and I know you must know a lot of them from your program. I know when I travel around the country, there are a few people out there, and they'll do whatever it takes to get this information out. They'll go the extra mile. They're concerned about the freedoms and liberties of their fellow men and their families and their loved ones. And that's what I think everybody that isn't so self-centered, isn't so caught up in, like the Romans said, give the guy a Super Bowl and fill his belly with peanuts and beer, and he'll be in good shape. You can control him wherever you want, and that's coming up, I guess, here in a couple days. Give him a sporting event and a piece of bread, is what they said.
I think it was bread and circuses.
Bread and circus, or whatever it is.
I think you're up. I think that what we have to do, Dave, is let people know that there's a danger. Now, people say, well, you're being an alarmist. Well, I think that sometimes you have to sound the alarm. And as you commented earlier, we should be the watchman on the wall. And, of course, that comes from Ezekiel 3 and Ezekiel 33, where we are called to sound the alarm. If people don't listen to what we say, then their blood and the blood of their families is on their hands. But if we don't sound the alarm, then their blood is on our hands. And this is what we do. I know this is what you do. And I know that you have traveled all across the country, sometimes speaking to very small audiences, sometimes speaking to very large audiences. But you're getting the information out. And I was so pleased to find that when you were up there in the Great Northwest, a couple of the areas where we have pretty good audiences, that you were able to get a fair number of people to come and listen.
Well, thanks to your listeners, yes, and your efforts, Dr. Stan. You've been a help to Hope for America Ministries, because I know your heart is to get this information out, whatever the cost, however you have to do it, and even if it means sacrificing 5 hours a day on the radio. I mean, that's, to me, unbelievable that you can keep going like that. I did 3 hours of radio the other day, and I was exhausted, Dr. Stan. But praise God that there are watchmen, and that's what a watchman does. He does sound, you know, blow the trumpet is what it says. I don't know if alarm's any different than a trumpet. So yes, I guess you can call us alarmist if you want to, because we're sounding the alarm, and I'll guarantee you what we're sounding it about. I'd like somebody to prove me wrong. I'd like somebody to say, David, what you're telling me is all sensationalism, because I'll guarantee you I can prove everything I'm saying. I have the documentation for everything I say. I have the clips to back them up. In fact, all my videos have clips and documentation right there. It's not just a speaking head. It covers all the different articles I talk about, and it's the people that are literally doing, planning these, the enslavement of the American people, that are talking on these videos, or they're telling the truth. Every once in a while they do actually tell the truth. And I believe the Protocols of Zion, one time they said they would tell, put truth beside lies. And so people won't have a clue what's going on. Sort of like,
right. Remember, but I think when you talk about the Protocols of Zion, you have to be very careful to point out that they're not what they purport to be. They are a Mein Kampf for exactly what's taking place, but they weren't written by the Zionists.
Right. Well, yeah, I don't get into who they were written by. They were written a long time ago by somebody.
Well, I'll tell you who they were written by. They were written by the disciples of Madame Blavatsky. This is covered in a book called War for Genocide by Norman Cohn. It's covered in another book called The Occult Hierarchy by a man, I've forgotten his name, but shortly after he finished his trilogy on the occult, why he died under mysterious circumstances. But basically, in fact, when I went through Colonel House's papers back at Georgetown University, at Yale University, why there I found a copy of the Protocols, but an entirely different translation than anyone else has ever seen. And, of course, Colonel House loved to do things like that. He loved to leave little clues, knowing full well that sometimes somebody in the future would pick this up and would begin to wonder why Colonel House left a complete a copy of the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, supposedly this Jewish conspiracy to rule the world, in Colonel House's papers. Colonel House hated Jews. And why was it a different translation? Why is it different than the translation circulated by Victor Marsland here in the United States?
And of course, the point I wanted to make, Dr. Stan, is it's, if you read them, you're going to see what's happening today. If you read the purport on Iron Mountain, I don't know where it came from. Supposedly it came from some report in New York written away, but it's exactly what's happening today.
Sure.
If you read Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, you'll see exactly what's taking place today. You put all these books together, and you can pretty much see what's happening in today's society. The plans were put in place a long time ago in these secret societies, and today they're playing them out in the papers. That's why I say there's truth beside lies every day. You can take, for example, Russia. One minute, Russia's our friends. The next minute, Russia, Putin is, in fact, I've got some articles here. Let me just show you a couple articles. Russia's romance to the West is cooling. So they're trying to tell us there it's cooling. Russia, now this is fact, Russia deploys fresh batch of nuclear missiles. Russia's deployed a fresh batch of top-of-the-line strategic nuclear missiles called Topol-M. So they are putting those in place, and I believe they're in place for a reason. I don't think we have time to get into that tonight. Russia opens a new base, a new military base. I think that's there for a reason, Dr. Stan. Again, these are supposedly the ones that the Russians were the ones that were our arch enemies during the Cold War, and then all of a sudden we broke down a concrete barrier and they became our friends. Not only did they become our friends, they have their own people here like Mikhail Gorbachev, determining which military bases to close in the United States.
I think that is the most amazing thing. If any of you would like to see that clip, and David has it, where Mikhail Gorbachev is actually working to determine which American bases will be closed, that almost blew my mind.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many of them. When it was Shelly Kashvili was the head of the military, his dad was a Russian. I think Charlotte Isherby has it put together pretty clearly that the merger between Russia and America has already taken place, and I think she's probably right on target. I haven't researched all her materials, but she's done a lot of research, and if we're not merged, we sure are working together in so many different ways.
Well, we think we're working together, but I believe that Russia is preparing for a war. I believe we've helped Russia at every turn. I think that we've financed the Russians and the communists, and I think we are financing them, knowing full well that they are actually building nuclear-tipped missiles and new squadrons coming out every couple of months, while America is unilaterally disarming, while Russia is building these highly accurate, mobile, intercontinental ballistic missiles, and they have us targeted, because I think we are moving into World War III, and I believe God is going to bring judgment on this country, unless, of course, there's a great awakening here and a great revival. And I don't see that coming now, but I think we still have to continue working for it.
I mean, I agree with you, Dr. Stan, that they are, but I don't think they know they're going to come against us. It says God's going to put a hook in the jaw of the leader of Russia. In other words, that means he's going to sort of go against his will, against the plans of these new worlders, and God's going to more or less put a monkey wrench in their whole gear set up. And But they definitely have a greater nuclear threat than anybody on the planet Earth. They have their missiles that can be deployed. If they're not pointed at America today, they can point them at us within 1 minute. They put out a new nuclear sub in the water December 31st. That nuclear sub by itself can blow the whole continent of America off the map. Just one nuclear sub that they put in the map. So a lot of people, I guess I say this because a lot of people have their trust in their military might, our military might, our defenses and everything. Please don't put your trust there. Put it in a man named Jesus Christ. He said he was the way, the truth, and the life. He said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. He claimed that things that no other man claimed. He said, I am the resurrection life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. He that liveth and believeth in me shall never die. Now, it sounds pretty normal when he said that, and I believe he was God, and I believe he meant what he said, and I believe that if we put our trust in his finished work, he said it was finished on that cross, and don't put our trust in our government, don't put your trust in your money, don't put your trust in your military might, don't put your trust in your education. So many areas we've got our trust in. We don't have altars like the Greeks had. The Greeks had altars when they served the god of sex. They went down to the altar of Diana or whatever it was, and they went down there and gathered and actually worshiped her. All we do is we get on the internet, we look at pornography, and we serve the god of sex. The master passion of your life is your god. So I would recommend everybody listening, please put your trust in God and do what he's called us to do per the word of God. It's a light unto our feet, a lamp unto our path, the Bible says.
Okay, Dave, let's get your telephone number out there so people can know how to reach you and Hope for America Ministry.
Okay, my number is 1-800, free number to call, 1-800-959-1991. That's 1-800-959-1991. Please leave your name, and if I spell it, if it's a hard name to understand, if it's Miller or Fox or somebody like that, I can spell it, but spell it out, your city, your street, your zip, clearly, and I'll get off a resource packet to you right away. And I really appreciate that, because I'm thankful for people that really want to know what's going on and that are concerned about what's happening today. I've always said, Dr. Stan, I'd rather be with five people that are concerned, that have a sense of urgency about them, than 500 that don't care, that just leave the presentations and then don't care.
Well, I think that the people that come to the presentation usually know that something's going on. But it's the great mass of people out there who don't come that we have to reach. And, of course, you and I can only reach so many. But people and every one of our listeners can talk to others and don't lecture them, don't grab them by the lapels and say, don't you know what's going on? Just ask questions and then try to get them to watch a video, watch one of Dave Wagner's videos, or watch a video that we produced, or listen to a tape. Tapes are by far the most economical way to approach things. And certainly, I think the most important thing that you can do is never give anybody a tape. You can lend it to them, but tell them, gee, I need this back in a couple of weeks, and I'll like to get it from you. That way, they have sort of an obligation to play it. Well, let's go to Ray, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. I know this is a little bit off the subject, but my uncle was at Dachau concentration camp in 1945 in the liberation.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw many, many American servicemen in the camp, but they never reported that there were any in those camps.
I have nothing, no
yeah, you don't know anything about it.
Don't know anything at all about it. And
yeah.
I've talked to a man who was at Dachau, and he didn't mention anything about American servicemen. So,
but they were there.
Right, maybe they were. Okay, well, thanks very much. Ray, anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay. So,
Ray, there's a lot of things that happen that we don't see. For example, Yalta. Who did you see after the Second World War, where your granddad was? You saw Franklin Delano Roosevelt sit down with Stalin, probably one of the biggest mass murders in human history, killed many more people than Hitler did. And then you saw him sit down with Churchill. So everything isn't what it seems to be with these individuals, so possibly what your granddad said was true.
One of the interesting things is that this new video that we have that has been put out by Chris Pinto called Megiddo, and he goes short, it's an overview of what's happening and where we're going in World War III, but he shows that picture of of Churchill and Stalin and Roosevelt, and comment that all three of them were Masons. Now, I knew that certainly Winston Churchill, who's had always a very good press coverage, and oh my goodness, a great man, everybody loves little Winnie, but he was an evil little man. I knew he was a Druid, and I knew he was a Mason. And I knew that FDR was a Mason, but I didn't know that Stalin was a Mason. And so I looked him up in my research books, and sure enough, he was a Rosicrucian, and of course, the Rosicrucians and Masons are kissing cousins. And
of course,
most people don't even know what the Rosicrucians are, and yet they've been going back. They're part of one of the secret societies dating back to the 1400s.
Right, Dr. Stan, I'm convinced most all the leaders, whether it be Netanyahu, Benjamin Netanyahu, he's a Mason. That was in an article I got. Very many leaders, most all the leaders of the world. In that, and by the way, that Chris Pinto's Megiddo, the Road to Armageddon, is an excellent video.
Have you seen that?
If they haven't got it already, they need to get it, because it's one of the best documentaries I've ever seen. It puts ties it all together, New World Order, communism, masonry, occultism, everything else. It just brings it all together.
Well, incidentally, I would mention, if you'd like to know more about that, why give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We're working with Chris to try to help to get this out. I agree with you, David. I think that's one of the most powerful videos I've ever seen.
Right. I'm behind him 100% on that one. I think that's great. Dr. Stan, we got a few more minutes, and I got to cover these subjects because this is so important to the listeners. They probably heard it from other guests you've had on, but I've got the articles here in front of me. I want to cover it real quick, and it has to do with H.R. 2417. And these are words from the Honorable Ron Paul when he spoke before the House of Representatives on November 20th of last year. And this is before this bill was actually signed. But here it says, it appears, he's speaking to his fellow House members, he said, it appears we are witnessing a stealth enactment of the enormously popular Patriot II legislation that was first leaked several months ago. He says it's an incredibly dangerous expansion of the federal police powers. That's what he was warning them, not to vote for it. Here's an article on December 13th out of the White House on the White House website. George Bush signed it here on December 13th. That's the day Saddam Hussein just happened to be, that whole deal that took place over there. But anyway, it says...
Just by coincidence, so everybody's attention was focused on Saddam Hussein. They,
yep.
Of course, passed this law to further restrict our individual freedom.
H.R. 2417. Today I signed into law H.R. 2417, he says. That's how it starts out. Talks about it, the intelligence activities and what's coming. And I can guarantee you people, unless you get involved, and I'm not preaching to you, I'm telling you because I care about you. That's why I left the job I have, because I care about the people of this country. When I first went out, I used to weep over the people of this country because I could see what the end of the road meant unless there was some kind of action taken. And this Patriot Act 2 is a dangerous bill. Patriot Act 1, the one they're talking about right now, I know President Bush said he was going to veto it if it gets on his desk, so they can talk about it all he wants, but he still has that veto power. Here it says, common criminals facing Patriot Act. This is one. The anti-terrorism laws are being used against the run-of-the-mill lawbreakers. That's exactly where they're heading. They're going to start out with these fundamental Islamic terrorists, and they're going to go against terrorism, terrorist this and terrorist that, and eventually these laws and these activity is going to be used to enslave every single America that's listening.
Well, I think if you read the Patriot 1 and Patriot 2 Act, there's not one word in there about Islamic terrorism. Not one reference to it. This has nothing to do with Islamic terrorism. It has everything to do with creating a federal police state in violation of our Constitution. But the tragedy is the American people find it difficult to believe that the president would lie to us. But that is what it was really all about. They're using the threat of terrorism and Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda to put out all of these laws that will make it much easier to arrest and convict people. And many of these people may be innocent. Now they say, oh, we're only going to use it against guilty people. But, of course, I would think that the guilt would be determined by the courts, not by the police officers who are using that. And time and again, in the name of well, expediency, because after all, we have to get these bad guys, these drug runners, et cetera, et cetera. We need these these laws. But if you want to go after the drug runners, you really ought to start right with the head of the CIA and the entire Central Intelligence Agency. At least many parts of it are involved in running drugs. And if you haven't read the article in Into the Buzzsaw by Gary Webb, who Pulitzer Prize winning author from the San Jose Mercury, telling about what happened to him when he wrote about the CIA involvement in drugs. Actually, you can go up on the CIA website and get their GAO report where they admit that their agents were involved in running drugs. And you certainly need to get our four tapes. It is a radio war on drugs, and you'll find out the war is not on drugs. The war is on the freedom of the American people, because the CIA is the biggest drug smuggler in America today.
Absolutely, and that destroys the families. But it wasn't by accident. They picked the fundamentalist Islamic Muslims, because there's another group of fundamentalists in this country that call Jesus Lord. They say he's the only way. They seem to be very narrow in their thinking, and that's who Lucifer's against. That's who these men are against. They want to go. They want everybody to go through the wide gate and the wide path that leads to destruction. One more point real quickly here. There's an article I have. It's some time ago, but it's very important. This was an editorial that was warning us. It says, great care must be taken not to repeat the mistakes of the past, where significant freedoms were lost in times of crisis without any gain in security. During World War I, laws were enacted to punish critics of the war effort. Mild and ineffectual speech led to long prison sentences. What happened during that time? That's what this. I believe that happened. I believe it's going to happen in the future unless people wake up, unless they call in and get involved and pray and get on their knees and ask God for mercy for this nation, because a nation that is killed kills 50 million babies every year. I believe God has a special place in his agenda for them, as he always has, because if we shed blood, that blood will be shed upon the nation that sheds blood. We've been talking about the New World Order. It's no secret anymore. I just got an article on January 26th here. It says in Iraq that the Arabs and the Turkmenistan and the Shiites and all these different tribes or different groups are competing for a place in the New Order. They're talking about the New World Order. That's exactly what's being put in place today in the Middle East. As well as they're going to put us in our place, I believe, too, because they're enacting the laws to enslave the American people. All it's going to take is one more incident, and people keep warning us that there is. Here's Dick Cheney on January 15th. He said instead of losing thousands of lives, we might lose tens or even hundreds of thousands of lives as a result of a single attack. Vice President Cheney speaking about the possibility of terrorists using chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons. Dr. Stan, I tell you that we've never had a terrorist incident on our soil yet that our government didn't know about. Because if you go back and look at Murrah Building, you go back and look at the World Trade Center in 93, you go back and look at 2001, there's a lot of questions that I would still ask that just don't seem to measure up what really happened. May God have mercy on us as a nation, Dr. Stan, because we have literally gone to sleep, and all it takes for evil to triumph is good people to do nothing. That's Edwin Burke's quote. God, Jesus Christ said, when the salt has lost its savor, when it no longer preserves, it's good for nothing except to be trodden under the foot of the Gentiles. To be trodden under the foot, and that's exactly what will happen. But we have nothing to fear. We, meaning people that have their faith in Jesus Christ, because he said, you live and believe in me, you never die. He says his grace is sufficient for whatever lies ahead for our lives. If we just put our trust in him and love him, he says, all things, not some things, all things work together for good to those who love him. So he's got tremendous promises in there to people that have their faith and their trust in this person of Jesus Christ. He said, if you confess me before men, I'll confess you before my Father which is in heaven. It's important that you confess him. It's important you stand up for what you believe in. It's important you do it in love, because everything we do, whatever it be, to share truth tonight or whatever we do, it has to be done with an attitude of love, not hatred, not self-righteousness or anything else. And that's God's spirit, because love is really what it all comes about. He says there's going to be only one way I'm going to know that you people are my disciples, and that's your love towards each other. In fact, we're called to love our enemies, and I know there aren't many listeners can do that. I can't do it, except for God gives me that love through the power of the Holy Spirit. And through that, I can do the supernatural. If I let him work through me, I can love my enemies. I can do good to those spitefully use me. And I can continue to love those that may come against me. And that's what we should have, his love, not our love. We must put ourselves under and let him be the Lord, the King of our life, Dr. Stan.
Well, I think that America is on the edge of an abyss. I believe that we are bankrupt financially. We're bankrupt, even in the worst way, we're bankrupt morally. And I really believe that militarily, America is incredibly weak. Oh, we may be the strongest country in the world as far as nuclear weapons and air force is concerned. But, you know, I believe the morale of our soldiers is really is failing and failing very, very rapidly. I believe we have no defense for America. I believe that we have laid ourselves open for a military attack. We have no anti-ballistic missile system. Well, I think that George Bush is going to build about 20 interceptors, but that if 10% of them work, I'll be very much surprised. We know that the enemy has thousands and thousands of warheads, nuclear-tipped warheads aimed at America. Why would you do something like that? Well, only if you were inviting an attack on America. And it doesn't make any sense unless you understand that behind everything that's going on today, there are other forces, there are secret organizations, and they have a plan, and I believe that they're following that plan. I don't know all the details, but I'm firmly convinced there's going to be an attack, a nuclear attack on America. Because, of course, men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And very, very few people in America today oppose the evil that has been done by the leaders of both parties here in the United States for so many years. In fact, when we earlier, previous hour, we had Colonel Ron Ray with us, and his cousin, I guess it was killed in the invasion of Okinawa. And, of course, that was totally unnecessary. The Japanese had been trying to surrender either 5 times in 7 months or 7 times in 5 months, and we wouldn't let them surrender. And the invasion of Okinawa and of Iwo Jima and dropping the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki were totally unnecessary. If you doubt that, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We'll send you the clipping out of the Chicago Tribune on the day that we signed the peace treaty with Japan on the battleship Missouri in the harbor there at Tokyo. You'll be fascinated to see what they were saying at that time. And, of course, totally blacked out of our books and newspapers since then. Dave, we're just about out of time. Parting thought for our listeners?
I just really would desire that the listeners put their trust in Jesus, Dr. Stan. Like I said, there's nothing to fear. He hasn't given you a spirit of fear. He's given you a spirit of power, love, and of a sound mind. I'd ask them to stand up for the truth, if nothing else, for their children and their grandchildren's sake. May they be that light. May they be those watchmen. May they tell everybody in love about the truth that they hear on this program.
Good night. God bless you, Dave.
Thank you. God bless you.
And this is Dr. Stan reminding you that if you'd like to get in touch with us, our number 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until Monday, when we'll be with you again, and we'll be on shortwave across America for 2 hours, tell your friends, may the Lord be with you.